This is Mental Wellness with licensed therapist Anne-Marie Matthewed. Mental Wellness provides general information regarding mental health. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You're encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own mental health care. And now, Anne-Marie Matthewed on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And you may have heard or not heard that this month is National Suicide Prevention Month. So we had done a previous show about this, and I thought I would reiterate some of those points today in case you missed it. So when we want to talk about suicide prevention and mental health wellness, we have to talk about stigma. I really think that the stigma around mental health is what gets in the way of most people seeking help. And it's gotten much better in the last several years. We have all kinds of professional athletes and actors and other sort of quote famous people talking about their mental health, talking about how they address it and how they've helped themselves. So that's fantastic. I think there's a real push to give public awareness to it's okay to have problems that you have to talk about. It's okay to not feel great mentally and emotionally all the time. And sometimes you need a little help. But the stigma does still exist. So we have some work to do. And when we talk about stigma, what do we think really comes to mind? You know, part of it is the words that people use. Maybe you picture the harsh words that people sometimes throw around, like crazy or unstable. Or maybe you think of silence, the way people lower their voices when they're talking about depression or therapy, as if it's something to be ashamed about. You know, stigma is very powerful, but unfortunately not in a good way. And it can be really damaging when people are trying to think about getting help. Stigma is when someone is viewed negatively, not because of who they are, but because of a condition they live with. In mental health, stigma is the unfair judgment that people with depression, anxiety, or other conditions are somehow less than others. Somehow they sometimes are even viewed as, oh, well, they might not be as smart. When the reality is all of us have mental health issues at one time or another, and some of us have chronic mental health issues, and it's okay to not be okay. You know, stigma shows up in two ways. First, there's public stigma, the negative stereotypes in society. Think about the way movies often portray people with mental illness as dangerous or violent or unpredictable. You know, and that shapes how we all think, even if we don't mean it to. And then there's self-stigma when individuals internalize these messages and they start to believe them. For example, a woman with anxiety might think, I'm weak. I shouldn't need help. That self-judgment can be just as damaging as what he or she might be feeling in society. And stigma can be very subtle too. Maybe it's the coworker who avoids sitting next to someone after learning they've been in therapy, or the family member who tells you, just toughen it up. You know, it doesn't always look like bullying. Sometimes it looks like silence, avoidance, or disbelief. So it doesn't always look blatant when someone is putting stigma or stigmatizing another person when they're talking about their mental health. And unfortunately, stigma is one of the biggest barriers to treatment. The World Health Organization estimates that nearly two-thirds of people with a diagnosable mental health condition never seek professional help. And stigma is the major reason why. And imagine a teenager who's struggling with depression. He thinks about telling his parents, but remembers how they once said, you know, therapy is for crazy people. So he hides it, his grades slip, he isolates from his friends. By the time he finally speaks up, he's not just dealing with depression, now he's battling hopelessness. He may have gone too long now, and he also has other issues. Stigma also fuels discrimination. People with mental illness face higher unemployment rates or housing challenges and greater poverty. And let's not forget the most heartbreaking impact of stigma is it does contribute to silence around suicide. Suicide is now one of the leading causes of death among people aged 15 to 29. And many lives could be saved if people just felt safe asking for help. A positive story I wanted to share. In Canada, a nationwide campaign called Bell, Let's Talk, encouraged people to speak openly about their mental health. In just a few years, millions of conversations were sparked. Suddenly, it wasn't unusual to hear a professional athlete say, "I see a therapist." That shift didn't solve everything, but it made a huge dent in stigma, and I think we are definitely seeing more of that here in the U.S. And you may have noticed how schools are now having mental health awareness weeks or mental health awareness workshops for kids. I know I've participated in our school system in Colchester with many community conversations where we talk about mental health issues. I've participated in mental wellness days, both at the middle school and the high school. And it's really great to get young people out talking about mental health issues, understanding what it is and how to get help, and also having parents come out to those community conversations with their child and really hearing a lot of great information on different topics. One of the things that you can do in your own circle to try to help reduce stigma is to mind your language. You know, be careful about what you say and how you say it. Instead of saying a person living with bipolar disorder, that would be better to say instead of a bipolar person. That simple change reminds us that people are more than their diagnoses. You know, listen without judgment. If someone confides in you, don't rush to say, "Oh, it's in your head," or "Cheer up," or "Tomorrow will be better." You know, instead try, "I hear you. That sounds tough. How can I support you?" You know, too often we kind of try to slough off when someone is telling us about their problems, and it doesn't really help them have the courage and the ability to seek help. We want to educate ourselves. We want to learn the facts about mental health conditions. For example, did you know that with proper treatment, 80% of people with depression fully recover? So that's awesome, or up to 80%. I guess not always 80%, but people can recover when they get help for their depression, their anxiety. They can learn a lot of coping mechanisms on how to manage the symptoms they feel if they're struggling with anxiety, depression, and other mental health issues. And you want to speak up. When you hear someone making a cruel joke about mental illness, you know, gently challenge it. You don't need to argue, but you can just maybe give a calm, gentle reminder that, hey, you know, words can hurt. Let's shift our tone here. And that can go a long way with people. Stigma is not inevitable. It's learned, and that means it can be unlearned. We can build communities where asking for help is a sign of courage, not a sign of weakness. And we can replace judgment with empathy and replace ignorance with education and replace silence with conversation. So I do encourage you to think about, do I somehow participate in stigma-related statements regarding mental health or things that I say to people in my life? You know, think about it. So that's the piece about stigma and how we can try to get people to really understand that it's okay to not be okay and to seek out help, especially on this national Suicide Prevention Month. And I mentioned earlier about coping skills. And we have sort of healthy and unhealthy coping skills that most of us use. When stress hits, we react in different ways. Some responses help us and other responses harm us. Unhealthy coping might include numbing our feelings with drugs or alcohol, you know, trying to anesthetize the feelings that we might have that we don't want to deal with. So we use substances to kind of not have to deal with it. And that's a trap that many people fall into. Sometimes we overwork to avoid our emotions. You know, you hear people say, oh, he or she's a workaholic. You know, we throw ourselves into work, or even if you're not working, you're throwing yourself into sort of the same activity over and over. Could be avoidance of an issue that you are feeling. And we also, oftentimes, we will isolate ourselves, sort of keep to ourselves, not be as social. We might not want anyone to see us or figure out how we're feeling, so we kind of stay to ourselves. Or the opposite, sometimes we lash out at others and we kind of blurt out everything because it's all pent up inside and then it comes out the wrong way. How many of us have done this, especially with people we're in an intimate relationship with? And by intimate relationship, I don't mean necessarily a girlfriend or a boyfriend. An intimate relationship is someone that you're close to. It could be a family member. It could even be a coworker. But, you know, next thing you know, our emotions are kind of spilling over in an inappropriate way, and we're lashing out. Now, all these things might bring a temporary relief, but unfortunately, they don't last, and they tend to deepen the problem, right? If we use substances, we might feel good for a minute, but when that wears off, we either have to do it again or feel the pain, and that's where many people reach to do it again, and now we have a whole nother issue, right? A substance abuse issue. So healthy coping, on the other hand, helps us face our challenges without damaging our well-being. And this can mean problem solving, you know, really working with ourselves or having someone help us sit down and understand, what is this problem I'm dealing with, and is there a way that I can help it? And that can help us, even putting it down on paper can really help us problem solve. Seeking support, that's another healthy coping skill. You know, reaching out to anyone, even if it's one person. Hey, I'm not feeling great. You know, I'm having a tough day emotionally. Reaching out and seeking support. And then practicing relaxation techniques. You know, this day and age, there's even all kinds of apps you can use. We've talked before about mindfulness, where you're doing these sort of short meditations that ground you, reset you, help you focus. You can get a mindfulness app, and you can do a little meditation right in your car before you walk into work, or right in your driveway before you walk into your home when you get home from work. But then you have other apps. There is one called the Calm app, and they have different ways to help relax you. You know, some people will get a massage. Some people will, you know, take a bubble bath or give themselves a foot bath. You know, practicing relaxation techniques, whatever works for you, is a healthy way to cope when we're not feeling great emotionally. And then expressing our emotions creatively. And that's different for everybody. Some people will color. You can journal. Journaling is great. We've mentioned that before. Sort of writing. No one's going to read this journal unless you want them to. But you're just writing down what you're struggling with mentally. And just kind of getting it out on paper. Some people like to draw. Some people like to make a craft or knit. or paint, join a pottery class, all kinds of ways to get our emotion out of us in a creative way is also a really healthy coping skill. Think about it. After a stressful day, do you collapse with 3 hours of mindless scrolling, or do you take a walk, call a friend, or write down your thoughts? The choice here really matters. And there's some things that we can do every day as we're coping. We have breathing exercises where you just have 5 slow breaths in and then 5 slow breaths out can reduce your body's stress response. Typically, you breathe in slowly through your nose and out slowly through your mouth, and you will feel your body relax. There's grounding techniques. There's one called the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise, where you name 5 things you see, 4 things you feel, 3 things you hear, 2 things you smell, and 1 thing you taste. And it sort of pulls you back into the present moment, which is also what mindfulness does. Getting you in the present moment, drawing your mind back in the present moment, so you can't excessively worry, at least for a few moments. Movement, physical activity, is not just prevention. It's an immediate stress reliever. It will release endorphins in your brain and will give you more energy. I don't know how many times I've dragged myself to my exercise class. I'm really tired. I might be overwhelmed with different things in my life, but if I can just get there, I always feel better when I leave that class because I've moved. I've done some exercise. I've released those endorphins, and I actually have more energy. We talked about creative outlets, music, drawing, gardening, and again, these release emotions in a safe way. And we talked about connection, calling a trusted person and simply saying, "I'm having a rough day." That can be incredibly healing. None of these are going to erase stress, but it might, you know, it might help you get through a hard time and help you feel a little better. So we will be back after a short break. Again, this is Anne-Marie Mafeud. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist with Colchester Counseling Associates. Our contact info is 860-537-5280. And you are listening to WTIC News Talk 1080, and this is our mental wellness segment.
This has been Mental Wellness with Anne-Marie Mafeud. Be sure to tune in 2 weeks for the next Mental Wellness on WTIC News Talk 1080. Till then, stay well.